Patrick Cox here.
And Nina Porzuki. You're listening to The World in Words.
Shall I paint the picture, Nina?
Oh, please paint it, Patrick.
We're a few miles from Pod Central in Boston, in the suburb of Newton, at the Moldovan Authentic Restaurant, which gives me an excuse to have some placinte and even pronounce it correctly.
It's
and Marmaliga. I remember Marmaliga, all of which I discovered when I spent 6 months in Moldova about 20 years ago.
And I lived in the region for 2 years as a Peace Corps volunteer. But we're going to talk a bit more about our adventures later on the podcast. Before that, a crazy linguistic experiment. Not this podcast. Another crazy linguistic experiment. This is a story from our archives, and we're going to be dipping into them now and again this summer. Patrick, did you know that you have produced over 430 episodes? I was going back through the archives. I couldn't believe that number. 430 episodes.
That's crazy. In fact, there are so many stories that we've done that I can't even remember them. It gets embarrassing. somebody says, oh, have you done something on Swedish? And I say, no, never. And then I find out we have. Well, this particular one I will never forget. And it really is crazy. Utterly loopy. But it's brilliant also in its own way. I came across it when I read a memoir by a linguist by the name of Derek Bickerton. The memoir's called Bastard Tongues. And Bickerton, he's obsessed with creoles, hybrid languages that come into being when people who speak different languages live side by side, all of a sudden. Like slavery and colonization, they created the conditions for many creoles in places like the Caribbean. So creoles and islands, they often go together. And it's no surprise then that Derek Bickerton lives on an island in Hawaii. An island was also the setting for this linguistic episode of his that he dreamed up. Somewhat notorious in certain linguistic circles, but like I say, kind of brilliant too. It was based on this understanding of how creoles came into being.
When people of different linguistic backgrounds are brought together without a common language, they have to improvise.
And so, says Bickerton, they string together words they recognize in each other's language. Over time, they develop a form of communication.
There's no structure to it.
Just short, broken sentences.
Very slowly uttered because the people are searching for words.
This might have been heard on sugar plantations in the 18th century when Europeans and African slaves needed to communicate. Linguists called this makeshift form of speech a pidgin. Now for Bickerton's big theory.
When the children of these first generation immigrants begin to learn the pidgin, they transform it. They turn it immediately into a full natural language.
Immediately. That's the key word, the controversial word. It's generally accepted that children have the ability to speak a language hardwired into their brains. But Bickerton takes that a step further. Under his theory, a child's innate ability to develop grammar kicks in, even in the absence of grammar, and it kicks in immediately. Well, the theory needed proof. It needed a lab. It needed guinea pigs. Guinea pigs who, at the start of the experiment, spoke a pidgin, and who by the end of it might speak something more sophisticated and structured, or at least their children might. Now, as a theorist, Derek Bickerton has always prided himself on thinking outside of the box, so far outside, in fact, that the box is sometimes out of sight. In 1976, he and a like-minded colleague were on a camping trip on the Hawaiian island of Lanai. That's where they dreamed up their experiment. Here's how Bickerton describes this moment in his memoir.
Over an open fire in the lee of Mount Lanai Hali, smoking some of Hawaii's most profitable crop, we discussed how we might test my theory empirically. Suppose we found an uninhabited island. Suppose we brought in speakers of 6 different, unrelated, mutually unintelligible languages, together with their children. Suppose we gave them a starter language, a vocabulary of a few hundred words, just words, without any grammar, so that they could communicate with one another. And suppose they stayed there for 3 years or so. What would happen? My prediction was that the adults would create a pidgin and the children would convert it into a creole. We looked at one another in the firelight. Shall we go for it? Yeah, let's do it.
Amazingly, the two linguists got the thumbs up from the University of Hawaii to plan their experiment. To fund it, they applied to the National Science Foundation. Bickerton also went in search of his uninhabited island, and he found it, not far from the Philippines, in the archipelago of Palau.
A beautiful little desert island, about a mile long and quarter mile wide.
Just to make sure, Bickerton spent 36 hours on this island alone.
I nearly got swept out to sea once when I crossed the channel where the tide was running out of the lagoon into the Pacific Ocean.
That aside, the island was perfect. There even appeared to be a spring.
There was brackish water, a sort of marshland in one corner of the island that would have made, an excellent little farm where we could have fed ourselves and so forth. And of course, there were plenty of coconuts.
Bickerton intended to stay on the island with his linguistic guinea pigs, along with a team of researchers. The participants themselves, six families, each speaking their own language.
Hola, mi nombre es Guillermo.
Hello, my name is Heidi.
Здравствуйте, меня зовут Андрей Петрович.
你好，我叫李欣。
God kveld, jeg heter Timon.
Je m'appelle Adeline Cyr.
Now, those particular languages would have been too mainstream for Bickerton. He wanted his participants to speak minority languages from places like Borneo and Papua New Guinea. But of course, most of the focus would be on the children.
你好，我的名字是Ming.
Je m'appelle Victor.
Hola, me llamo Enrique.
Ideally, some of the kids would be even younger. Would these infants end up linguistically leapfrogging their parents? Would they come up with a richer vocabulary and grammar? Or would the development of a Creole take longer than a single generation, as many linguists in the field believed? Bickerton was certain his study would provide an answer, so long, of course, as the National Science Foundation provided the money he'd applied for.
The thing was going through very smoothly. I was, in fact, daily awaiting the final sign-off, when suddenly we got this message from the highest level. We had to suspend it.
Bickerton believes that, at the last moment, one of his critics got to the National Science Foundation. But even back in the 1970s, when social experiments were more commonplace, Bickerton's proposal had raised eyebrows. For sure, he could have gotten the consent of six families to live together on an island for 3 years. But truly informed consent?
There's no way that you could fully inform individuals about what exactly would happen to them socially and psychologically over that course of time.
This is author Michael Erard, who writes on language issues. He understands why Bickerton's experiment was ultimately blocked, but a part of him would have liked to have seen it go ahead. This one had it all.
In a sort of Lord of the Flies, like a linguistic Lord of the Flies way.
Lord of the Flies, Robinson Crusoe, and of course those survivor-type reality shows. And how about a movie adaptation of the project? It would have to start, says Michael Erard, with Bickerton and his sidekick dreaming up their experiment.
Owen Wilson would play the other guy. Who would play Derek Bickerton? Jim Carrey. It would be like a Jim Carrey and Owen Wilson vehicle. The two professors coming up with some wacky idea around a campfire, stoned out of their gourds.
Of course, when things got a bit slow on the island, Hollywood might take liberties.
I mean, you'd probably have to end it with an encounter with some otherwise unknown creature that also inhabits the island at the same time. Or you'd have to end it with them stumbling upon this portal into another dimension or something like that.
Strangely, Bickerton himself has never played out his experiment in print. Strange because he also wrote novels on the side. But they were fantasies, and he never liked to think of his island project that way. He's left with this thought.
Nothing really can take the place of a controlled experiment. I don't think that you can ever get any kind of certainty of exactly what the human brain is capable of, language-wise, until you can somehow control the input to that brain.
Derek Bickerton knows that these days, no government agency or university would fund his idea. So who would? Bickerton thinks maybe only a retired billionaire who wouldn't care about the public outcry. But that's a long shot, and perhaps just as well. The puzzle of how Creoles, how these island languages have evolved, may just have to remain a puzzle.
Is it kind of terrible to say that I wish the experiment had actually happened? Like, it would have been so cool to see what had happened, how these languages would have evolved, and it would have made for a totally kick-ass movie or documentary.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, move over Arrival, right?
Right.
I mean, why don't we just try and update the stats right now? You know, I mean, it's been a while. 7 years ago, in fact, when Michael Erard made those suggestions.
Yeah.
You know, who would it be now?
Right. Who do you think?
I don't know. For a start, I'd like to make it two women.
Okay.
It's tough to look past Amy Adams because she was so amazing.
Look past Amy Adams.
But okay, I will do. Kate McKinnon. She's
Got
the crazy eyes.
She does have the crazy eyes.
And she's so unpredictable. I'm going for her as Derek Bickerton. What do you think about the other one?
Well, the person that immediately came to mind, T.J. Miller, because he's totally crazy.
Right. Okay.
And
fair enough.
I love his kind of crazy.
Constance Wu?
Oh, yeah. That's good. She'd be good.
Yeah.
Key and Peele.
Oh, that would turn it into a horror flick.
No.
Well, after the movie, dinner.
And good thing that we're in a restaurant, right? Now, it's the Moldova Authentic Restaurant in Newton, Massachusetts, owned by the wonderful Artur and Sandra Andronica. Bună ziua!
Bună ziua!
So, I wanted to launch into this language podcast with a language question for everybody out there. Pop quiz, folks. What is the official language of Moldova? Sandra? Artur?
Romanian.
It is Romanian.
Romanian! So, yeah. How many times have people gotten it wrong? When you say, I'm from Moldova, and they say, what do you speak there? What
sort it's either, the question is, do you speak Moldovan or is it Russian? And then we say it's Romanian, like, no way. Yes, it is. Romanian is our official language.
The law says that it's the Romanian language, but it is true that you're going to have different opinions if you ask different Moldovans. Some might say that it's Moldovan, which is not entirely wrong. The roots are from Romanian, but I would say that there exists a Moldovan slang. So there would be some different words that are only used in our region. We might understand Romanians when we go visit Romania. They might not understand all of our words. So there's going to be a bit of a difference just because of the regions and the people, the way that they speak.
So also in Moldova, right, you've got a whole bunch of people who are just Russian speakers who do not understand Romanian / Moldovan, mm-hmm. right? I came across this quite a bit. In fact, I would play soccer every Sunday morning with Romanians and Russians. Romanians versus Russians. I played on the Russian side because I didn't want to play against the Russians for physical reasons. But the Romanians would all talk Romanian among each other because they knew that the Russians didn't understand. Mm-hmm. And the Russians didn't have that ability to speak the secret language because all the Romanians understood Russian. Did you come across that a lot?
That's definitely very accurate. It does happen a lot. There's a big difference in terms of that language barrier. So the Russian-speaking people would rarely want to learn Romanian and try to interact with us in their own language. On the other hand, we would usually know both languages. I don't know, it's a cultural thing. It's just easy for us to get around and we just like know the language. And it would be true. You'd find quite often people who just wouldn't even be able to say a word. Some of them might understand you, but not be able to say anything. They might be polite and just say, like, look, no offense, but I understand you guys, but it's hard for me to speak in Romanian. So instead of embarrassing myself, I'll just, if you don't mind, talk to you in Russian, but you can talk to me in Romanian, so which is totally fine. But there are scenarios when they just, you know, they've lived there for their entire life and they just don't even want to learn. They don't really need it because they're fine as it is.
Tell us a little bit about where did you guys grow up? And did you go to school in Romanian and Russian? Or was that Russian like a second language you learned in school? Or how did you pick up both languages?
We are both from the capital city, from Chisinau, me and Artur. We actually met in high school. We went to the same school together. It was a Romanian school. It still is. Liceul Academic Român Englez Mircea Eliade. And it was one of the few schools in the city that taught only Romanian. And the first few years of primary school, we were taught from Romanian books, like that were brought from Romania to Moldova, and we were taught purely Romanian. And from second grade, English, right? We were
so you learned English before you learned Russian?
Yes, but we would already speak Russian at the time when we started being taught Russian because of the life outside of the school.
Yeah, that's kind of like the curriculum in our high school system. You have obviously Romanian, which is the main language. They teach you Russian as a second language, but that's like later on, there's more emphasis on English as a second language and French, even German. But definitely English and French would be up on top there. So those would be more concentrated languages than the Russian.
So that's really changed since the days of the Soviet Union.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, we have Russian schools. Yeah, we have special schools that teach Russian as their main language and have Romanian as a second language, just the vice versa from all of our schools. When I was growing up, it was a huge cultural and language shock and barrier because when I was born not in the capital. We were born out of the city. My parents, shortly after we were born, we were talking in Romanian, and then shortly we had to move to Kazakhstan for my dad's job. And we've spent quite a lot of time there, so we started going to kindergarten. Then we were just talking in Russian, so I obviously everything would happen in Russian. In the kindergarten, I knew Russian. So when we came back to Chisinau, I could not speak any word in Romanian. So I was just a complete Russian language guy. I was a kid. So I had to learn Romanian from scratch from the beginning. And I learned it to the point that I couldn't speak a word in Russian. So up until, I don't know, I think I was 18 years old, my Russian was so bad that when I would speak with my friends in Russian, they would make fun of me. So I had to travel all the way to the U.S. to come to Boston to study and have friends that were from Ukraine and from other nationalities where we would speak Russian. And it's only then when I would actually speak more Russian and kind of be more fluent in it. It's funny how it works. When I couldn't speak a word in Romanian at some point, and then I couldn't speak a word in Russian. And in the end, I mean, I speak fluently all of those languages. But that's kind of like when you grow up, there's so many things happening around you. And that's the case with many other people in our country, that you just learn it by itself, just by communicating with people. And if you don't, you just forget it.
Wow. Sandra, what about you? What's your language history? Did you speak it growing up as a kid, Russian and Romanian?
If I go back to the beginning like Artur did, my family story is a little sadder. My parents got married and moved to Transnistria.
So Transnistria is this part of Moldova that is not controlled by the Moldovan government. It is controlled by Russian...
That's the story today.
Aligned
but
forces.
It used to be part of Moldova, and it was the same country, but it was influenced more by Russia. And my parents were both teachers in a Romanian-speaking school. They were not teachers of Romanian language, but they were teaching in Romanian. And when the war started, my father was shot because he was speaking Romanian. Just easy as that. And, well, he wasn't killed, luckily. But that was the point when my family decided that we should move from there. I was only 3 years old, and we moved to the capital. Obviously, I would speak Romanian and Russian. My mom would say that was because my nanny was Russian. And it was really hard to find in that region someone Romanian-speaking. Sometimes my mom would just ask me, beg me at dinner, please choose one language that you're speaking to. Is it Russian or Romanian? Because every other word... You know, I was a kid, I couldn't structure it properly in my mind. Is it Russian or Romanian? It just, words come easily. That was when I started making the difference before going to school. But obviously, after I went to school, I was taught proper Romanian and then English and then Russian. And I could make the difference between these three languages.
So many languages. Is there a term? So like, you know, there's Spanglish or Chinglish when you're mixing two languages and it becomes like another language. Is there a word in Moldova for like when you're mixing Russian and Romanian?
Yes, Moldovan.
that's actually true, because this story, this example, is what happened to every kid when we were growing up, and that's kind of how you can't say that we speak fluent Romanian like the way that you would speak in Romania.
Thank you so much, Artur and Sandra, Andronic. for letting us come.
Thank you so much.
And also thanks to Louis Cronin, Stephen Davey, Jonathan Dyer, Robin Moore, Kathy Merritt, Robert O'Connell, Catherine Whalen, Rupa Shenoy, Andrew Sussman, and Mike Wilkins.
That is quite a list. The World in Words is a production of PRI's The World. You can tweet us at LingoPod. As always, thanks so much for listening.
Nina, this is my favorite Moldovan song.
Draga Salute.
I like to call it the Numa Numa song because, or Mayahi.
Mayahi.
But if pushed, I will say Dragoste. How do you say it?
Dragosta Dinte.
Okay, by Ozone, Moldovan pop band. Moldovan. The summer hit in Europe of 2005.
Was it 2005 or 2004? I remember
2004.
I was in Romania.
It was 2004.
It was big.
You know what it was? I think it was 2005. It came over here when it...
Oh.
Where it was 2005.
It jumped the pond.
Yeah, it jumped the pond via YouTube, and Gary Brolsma, the guy in New Jersey who sat in his bedroom and turned his webcam on and did a kind of lip sync thing and became one of the very first YouTube sensations.
Oh my God. First heard that song. Do you remember first hearing that song? I was like, this is a ridiculous song. I can't believe that.
But I kind of love it. I mean, I'm a sucker for, you know, trashy pop songs and
Euro trash pop songs.
Yeah. And if it's Moldovan as well.
Yeah.
So.
There's actually my one favorite band from living in Romania was actually Moldovan too.
Oh.
Zdob Shiz Dub. And they have a great song that I love about sheep. Anyway.
Dragosta dinte.
Dinte. And te is a tree, the linden tree.
So what is dragosta?
Love.
Love the linden tree? Oh, love under the linden tree?
Yeah, love under the linden tree. Or love of the linden tree.
Oh, how romantic. It doesn't sound that way, really.
But it is, like, you know.
What does numa mean?
Well, nu is like no, numa. You want to leave, but you don't want to take me. Numa. So it actually has meaning. It's not just sort of like gibberish.
Totally. I only think of it as pure joy. It's the sounds that you like so much.
All right.
Well, here's the thing that really gets me. If you go to iTunes and look for this song, it says, it's got all these different mixes, right, of the song. But of the original version, it says, original Italian version.
Oh.
Which, it says everything about just how obscure the Romanian language is.
And how nobody knows that it's a romance language. Come on, people, it's a romance language. Romance in a sea of Slavs. Or so they say.
It's so sad.
It is. That makes me more irritated than anything else. We should write something on the iTunes page.
Oh, yeah. Hey, everybody, if you feel so inclined, go to Dragosta Dinte. No, actually, just look up Ozone. O-Z-O-N-E.
Oh, there's a hyphen. It's not all one word.
Yeah,
I always thought
in
my, like, Ozone.
Yeah, go there and leave a note to whoever is responsible for putting up this assertion.
Let's get this changed.
That this is in Italian.
Let's get this changed. All of you, take to Twitter.
A mission.
Let's take to Twitter. Ozone is a Moldovan band. Yeah, there is no romance without Romanian. Presa plec dar numa numa ye. Numa numa ye. Numa 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 ye. Do și dragostan din te. Mă gândesc în ochii tăi.
Maya
hi.
Maya
hu. Maya ha, Maya ha.